Hello and welcome to the British Chambers podcast channel. We're delighted to bring you a second season of in-depth discussions and conversations with our members and high-profile speakers, ranging from topics like trade, fintech, arts, sports, and more within Singapore, ASEAN, and the UK. Thank you for your support, and we hope you enjoy today's podcast.
Hello, and welcome to the Singapore British Chamber of Commerce podcast series. I'm Alistair Gillies, Managing Director of Greengate Advisors and Chair of the Built Environment Committee here at the British Chamber. This episode, we're focusing on a COVID-19 topic, but one very pertinent to where we are at the moment as we continue our journey to a more normal world, managing infection risk in buildings. I'm pleased to be joined today by Ben Moo. Ben's a Technical Director and Partner at Mott MacDonald, a global engineering management and development consultancy. Ben heads up sustainability and healthy building design for the East Asia region. And aside from being based in Singapore, Ben's previously been located in Australia and Dubai and has spent his career designing and advising on sustainable and innovative solutions for properties across the globe. Welcome, Ben.
Thank you. Hi, Alistair.
Okay, kicking off, can you just give a quick overview to the listeners about what you consider infection risk factors in the context of a building?
Yeah, so that's a really relevant question at the moment. We spend so much of our lives in buildings, and normally we think about infection risk in the context of hospitals and surgery. But in the last 12 months, due to COVID, we have all been educated, whether we want to or not, on the infection risk just going to the shops, dining out, and even staying in a hotel or resort. So I guess there are a couple of main avenues here. Firstly, there is this transmission risk just due to close contact with other patrons. In this case, the proximity to other people and the time of interaction all play a key part. You know, so the design and layout of the building is important. For the respiratory pathogen that is found in COVID-19, ventilation and airflow certainly play a crucial factor for buildings. That said, not all infectious disease threats are respiratory, and buildings can be designed to mitigate against diseases spread. For example, the fecal oral route. So better layout of bathrooms to optimize hygiene and make sure there are no touch points between washing hands and leaving the bathroom. And then also you have vector-borne transmission. So examples like Singapore, which is endemic for malaria or dengue or other mosquito-borne diseases, having, say mesh screens on windows, avoiding stagnant water. And then finally, with fomite transmission, we look to reduce touch points or make touch points with easy clean materials. So all these things kind of contribute to risk factors when you walk into any building.
Now, there's been a lot of discussion in the past, pre-COVID, with respect of getting buildings healthier. Yep. It's been things like sick building syndrome and how we get rid of that. But with COVID-19 being the topic of the day, have you seen real step changes in the design and operation of buildings since the pandemic started?
So I think to answer that, I might just start with saying it's important that the data from our health experts is used to inform our approach to design and operations. The science behind different infection risks must underpin any mitigation measures. And we understand this a lot better now and can directly relate the science to any risk reduction measures. certainly now in the projects we undertake, we look at, say, for instance, the journey map of visitors. You could be an airport or MRT station. And we actually identify every potential transmission risk point. Combining this with the data from our epidemiologists, what we do is we can then quantify the risk of transmission. So this is being done in design now. Other things we were doing in design is to look at accurately calculating air movement or particulate dispersion through things like computational fluid dynamic analysis. Occupancy layout should consider airflow patterns and pathways. An example in our workplace is how workstations are staggered or laid out to avoid stale air. And the data has shown us the increased risk of transmission in high-density offices. I guess the way we have been designing, has been particularly emphasis, especially where there's significant public health health risk.
Awesome. And it's probably true to say that, you know, the short term or over the last 12 months, the focus has really been about operational initiatives, for want of a better word, to get spaces safer. But but moving beyond that, you know, if you're a landlord or a tenant, what should you be thinking about? Do you think there'll be a situation in the future where buildings are less desirable if they don't have enhanced infection control measures?
Yeah, I believe so. I think we have seen the impact on businesses and how much effort and cost has been required to reopen buildings, you know, not adequately set up to deal with the guidelines from health experts. You know, in some cases, whole business models have had to be altered. We see these rolling waves of surges in cases and hence the constant tightening and then relaxing of measures from the fundamental way the buildings are designed, you know, entry exit points, people movement to avoid congregation of exposure, the operations of building systems to reduce risk infection, the faculty and ability to execute changes very quickly, I think will be vital to maintain business continuity. So maintaining revenue or keeping operations going with minimal disruption will be a key driver. And you know, that all being said, not to mention the risk to staff or public health, you know, which is at the end of the day, the most important. I think we've all experienced now the significant changes in operation of the building. So it's definitely here and it's definitely going to be around for some time to come.
So when we're thinking about moving into the sort of the medium long term, is there a one size fits all approach for the different asset classes, different types of buildings? I was thinking things like, you know, introducing greater amounts of air movement, or is a fundamental different strategy required for the different building types and in different locations?
So that's a really good question. I mean, firstly, it's important to remember that there are other infection risks, right? Not just from COVID-19. So I guess COVID or the virus, you know, is the topic of the day. But just on this one point, you know, the way we tackle different infection risks, whether it be respiratory or fomite transmission, varies. Right? Different viruses can live for different length of time and thrive or die in different conditions. And I've mentioned this before, but this is where the engineered solutions really need to be informed by the data from our health experts. One example, for instance, is, you know, immunobiologists have reported improved immunity against respiratory infections at mid-range relative humidity. However, in the case of the virus associated with COVID, it's been shown that humidification of up to 65% is very limited or no effect on the stability of the virus. So as more data comes out, we learn about efficacy of our measures, and, you know, we need to stay up to date, you know, with our approaches. Another consideration, or another really important consideration, you know, is generally the inverse correlation between improving air quality, example, and energy consumption. So we, you know, we've been all pushing the green agenda and energy efficient buildings for the last couple of decades now. But when we increase outside air rates or we improve filtration, you know, increase pressure drop through, say, HEPA filters, we introduce other power penalties such as UV lamps, you know, we increase energy consumption. So it's important that any solution is considered, you know, holistically and balances, you know, all these factors together. I guess the other thing you said is, you know, COVID has reawakened, you know, this collective urgency, you know, that we are aware of for climate change, you know, which is arguably an even greater issue facing mankind. So I guess we, you know, we definitely need to balance this all out. And I guess the other thing on, I guess, back to your question on the, you know, a one size fits all, different buildings have different usage profiles. So, you know, stadia, for instance, is a huge number of people congregating, you know, and or leaving at the same time. So measures to deal with people movement or social distancing and egress, you know, have to be enhanced. So different asset classes means different solutions that are required. You know, and that's something which can be designed in right from the get-go.
One thing you said there was quite interesting, you know, to me, the inverse correlation between the energy consumption and the certifications. Yeah. Have we seen those certification bodies, whether it be LEED or BREEAM, Greenmark here in Singapore, looking to consider this potential challenge at the certification stage, or is that still to come?
I mean, it's something which definitely has been identified. I think it's still to come. I mean, at this point in time, the focus has been on, what are some of the best practices we can do in terms of right now improving our situation to reduce infection control. So, I think the important thing is that, you know, we are aware of it and that any solution we approach, we do it all things considered.
Fair enough. So let's put ourselves in the tenant's shoes for a second. I'm looking for a new property. I've got a bunch of prerequisites. But what are two or three things that you'd give from an infection control perspective that you'd want to see in buildings or tenants should look out for?
You know, from an operations perspective, buildings that have, you know, facilities management that are informed and building services systems that have the ability to be controlled to the latest guidance. I think that's really important. You know, for instance, when it comes to ventilation rates, we kind of alluded to this just before, you know, the WELL standard targets 60% more outside air than ASHRAE minimum ventilation requirements. Upgraded filtration performance and air treatment devices such as UVC generators or bipolar ionizers also help enhance air quality. Both SIBSE and ASHRAE recommend supplying fresh air as high rate as possible. But as we've kind of pushed on this point, these enhanced measures also increase energy consumption. Another thing is materials and cleaning regimes are a really important factor. Data has shown that the virus that causes COVID can last on materials for hours to days. So examples are on copper surfaces, virus has been detected after 3 to 4 hours. On steel or plastic, that virus has been detected up to 72 hours. So even when we look at retrofits or new design, things like door handles, the materiality can help reduce transmission risk. Look for other things like antimicrobial bio surfaces and treatments, then even touch-free access, you know, touch-free tap soap dispensers, lift buttons. I'm starting to see more and more of that actually, even as retrofits. So the US-based CDC and also the World Health Organization provide, you know, really good guidance in this area as well.
Just sort of the retrofitting, touching on that a little bit more, it's quite interesting that you mention all of these are things that will make a material difference to the building and the occupant's health within it. But if I'm a landlord, if I'm an investor, and I know that the government at the moment, based on track record, and this isn't any government in particular, is going to base policy decisions related to the occupation of buildings, you know, hairdressers closed, hairdressers open, offices 50% full, offices 100% full, as a broad brush approach across the different types of buildings. So it doesn't really matter whether your building has great infection control or not. If the government is going to make the same policy across the board, how should building owners, landlords, investors start thinking about that balance between the investment into the property and actually the ability to keep it open more than one that hasn't been invested in, for instance?
And look, this is a really good question. I mean, I think at the end of the day, irrespective of policy, you know, economics essentially stand for itself. We've seen the devastating effects of lockdowns and what that's done on the economy, right? So if you are a building owner or operator and you cannot open, you simply will not survive, right? So the other thing is the impacts of COVID-19 will be around for years to come, you know, even with the mass rollout of vaccines, which we're starting to see now. So I believe those who do not address, you know, managing infection risk, you know, will have a reduced asset value. You will not be able to attract tenants if you're not able to demonstrate being able to open and operate with adequate infection control measures in place. And you know, as mentioned before, it can vary. You can have as potential cases surge, we may need to tighten and loosen that. So we have to be able to react really, really rapidly as well. And then ultimately, you know, there's a duty to public health and building occupants and employees. We know the disease is fatal. So, you know, simply put, you know, it must be done. So, you know, I guess we've seen it in terms of from an economic perspective, but I would say that you'd be remiss for building owners not to put in the investment.
No, fair enough. All good points. Okay, just looking into the future a little as we wrap up here. In 10 years' time, you know, how do you see the infection risk landscape in buildings and people's perception surrounding the infection risk when talking about a building?
Yeah, so look, I guess my short answer is, and my disclosures, I don't know the future. You know, that said, you know, the reality is, you know, things like pandemics have plagued humankind, you know, since the beginning. It's happened before and it's going to happen again. Right? So with the data and technology we have now, we are in a unique position to design into our buildings a level of pandemic readiness. This is just to ensure business or operational continuity is possible to the required level, you know, for infection risk mitigation. So I think that will definitely be pretty commonplace. I think that carefully designed buildings, whether it be airports, stadia, malls, or even offices, will be able to react faster and more seamlessly than we did this time around when inevitably this new virus arrives. So I think, you know, that speed of adoption will be there. And I guess related to that is another thing we've probably all noticed is there's been a significant difference in public response, you know, in different cultures across the world. So, you know, I guess not so much prediction, but my hope for the future is that as a collective, we'll be more aware to take things more seriously next time. And so we can react faster, follow the guidelines, and ultimately help us continue our lives with as minimal disruption as possible. And just as a final point, I think, you know, the uptake in technology has rapidly accelerated. Now, in the construction sector, you know, in Singapore, it has been reported that digital adoption in the last 12 months has been more than in the last 5 years. So certainly in the way we conduct business through video conferencing, we see supply chains and built environment changing even faster, you know, as business models have needed to pivot, you know, driven by economics. I think our spaces in the buildings will be more flexible and digitally enabled for sure. So you know, I think that's quite exciting as well.
Absolutely. No, some really good points there. Thank you so much, Ben, for your time today. It's been really, really helpful. If anyone's listening, obviously needs any assistance with infection risk control in buildings, Ben is your man. Ben, much appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to our podcast, and we hope you enjoyed today's episode. As always, don't forget to subscribe and rate our channel on Spotify, Apple, Google, and all other podcast platforms. For more information about the Chamber, please visit www.britcham.org.sg.